though it is dominated by the massive clouds of cruelty, oppression, distrust and fear, it is there, flowing strongly below the surface. First we must know what we are, in which case our doctrinal teaching needs overhauling. Then must come the realization of the survival of the human soul, and all that that implies. And because no such realization could endure did it not rest upon eternal verities, it is clear that survival implies pre-existence. With this would come the knowledge that while we are all brothers in spirit, we are not necessarily born equal, a conclusion which, under the law of love, imposes responsibilities upon those with greater capabilities. Next would come a new insight into the nature of matter, of the natural world, and the interrelationship of the many planetary forces that go to the mechanism of the universe. There is an immense field for research here, with fascinating possibilities. For to understand these forces is halfway to bringing them under control. From all this would be born a new wonder at the immensity and splendor of what we call God, for surely no research of such imponderables could be profitable without recognition of the source and inspiration of them all. Soon we should be able to accept as reasonable and normal the immanence of other worlds and conditions coincident to our own, and the existence of forms of life in our own environment upon whose cooperation and activities we should have to reckon. Finally, we should be able to look back down the vistas of time and visualize something of the immense story of man's resurgence from the pit into which man, and that includes ourselves, had fallen, and the wondrous love of God which had engineered our recovery through ages of benign influence acting upon our defiant free will. If we can build up that inspiring picture of the past, we can surely trace the progress of the future, the preordained flight into the promised land which has been kept inviolate against our return to its joys. I broke off my reverie, for there were unmistakable signs of weakness which meant that I must return to my inert physical body. I looked out of the window and tried to fix in my mind the wonderful changes that must have occurred as that strong wave of regeneration swept over the men and women of the future to give them their first faint recognition of what they had lost for so long. Surely at this time the masculine element in humanity must have shone forth to meet the feminine element in its whole being, a divine proposal for their reunion in a spiritual remarriage of souls. From the distant peaks of time, from the mighty mountains of spirit, must the love call have echoed through the vaults of space, hailing the demolition of separation, inviting men and women to the glorious consummation of their selfless love. None who were ready could fail to hear it. Surely now the glorious voices of the sons of the morning must be rejoicing at the approaching end of the long, long saga of redemption, shouting together that lovely Angelus whose chimes ring out, "You and I and my Father are one." Amen and Amen. Chapter 15. Ethereal Earth. As above so below, that which has been shall be again. From an ancient prophecy. How shall I begin to describe what we experienced on our last visit into the future, a condition so utterly divorced from anything anyone has ever imagined that I can scarcely find words in which to express what little I can recall. I would need to set a little lamp behind each word which appears in cold print in order to illumine them all to something approaching their real meaning. Zeros had warned me that this flight out of time would be our last, that his mission was drawing to a close and soon he would be leaving me to digest and record the tremendous experiences he had brought within my reach. But he promised that although he would no longer be making objective appearances in my study, he would continue to inspire and enlighten my efforts to translate those experiences into readable form. Only since I have attempted that task have I realized to the full how difficult it would prove to be. Thus my anxiety increased as I realized how soon he was to depart from conscious contact with me, and I recalled how much I still wanted to know. However, I was more than thankful that I was to have the unseen guidance of my dear friend in the days that lay ahead, how to translate the reality of those ephemeral experiences into words which did not rob them of any coherent meaning. I had grown to admire and to love this being of such deep wisdom and knowledge, yet who was so humble and understanding in his approach to the human outlook. Our last glimpse of evolving mankind was to be of an era when man had transcended his purely physical state with an almost complete spiritual ascendancy, having attained once more that Adenic bliss from which he had fallen so completely unthinkable eons of time ago. "You look at life through a keyhole," Zeros had said, in his apartment way of putting fundamental problems in a nutshell. "You peep at realities through a tiny hole in the wall of materialism, and wonder why you cannot understand what you see. You try and measure that with your senses and analyze it by finite means. What you can measure with your five senses forms but a small waveband on the spectrum of infinity. You observe what your senses tell you and think that that is all. Yet your physicists know that there are many degrees of vibration above and below those to which human senses respond. Have you not got whistles which you cannot hear yet which a dog at a great distance can hear clearly? Have you not got radar telescopes which can see stars through thick fog which can never be visible to the eye? You are learning fast but not so fast as to overcome the inhibitions to which you cling so hard. I ask your pardon for laboring this point, for until it is firmly established there can be no human understanding of what I am trying to present to you, no freedom from the thraldom of time and space, no sense of reality. You will remember the occasion when we stood, out there in space, and watched the unfoldment of the real, multiple nature of the Earth, how it opened out into progressively rarefied planes of existence, glimpsing for a moment planes which are invisible to the restricted waveband of human vision, but clearly defined and solidly substantial to those who are equipped to dwell therein. That alone is a tremendous step for anyone who had pinned his faith to a geographical universe, a multitude of empty worlds spinning in empty space. Now you knows that empty space is a misnomer. There is no such thing as a vacuum in the fullness of creation. The denser these planes become, as they cling close to the hard core of the physical expression of a planet or star, the more limited they are in expression, but the rarer they become, the more tenuous their consistency, the more do they expand until they draw near to mergence into infinity, so that the whole of creation, on that level, tends to become a great unity. That is an idea that must be pondered over and allowed to sink into the consciousness before it can become acceptable to most. Yet if once it can be encompassed, it will be found to provide a background to your thinking which will unlock many doors and help you to realize why humanity is a unity too. I felt that any comment was uncalled for. And my mind was busy trying to relate this difficult concept to what I knew and understood of creation. To see before me, as I had been privileged to do, realms within realms, separated from each other by different rates of vibration, yet all forming a comprehensive whole, was one thing. But to absorb that transcendent fact within my intellect so that I could write about it convincingly, was something quite different. I trembled for the fate of my book. A sudden thought made me catch my breath. Perhaps it was some magic on Zero's part, but in a flash I had a realization of what God meant. All this variegated expanse of creation was God in action. This is what he really was, at least that aspect of God which a finite mind could grasp. In the whole wide universe there was nothing else but God. His expression as tenuous matter, as solid density, as fine intelligence, was the reality of the whole of creation. Anything else must therefore be unreal, illusory, figments of human acceptance which had been manifested into form by the defiance of man's will. Oh, for the pen of a genius to express in words all that came to me in that blinding flash of illumination. All this great expanse in which I had traveled with my beloved mentor, crossing the boundaries of time again and again, was the creation of love, a work of love. Never more could I see evil in any created thing without recalling that the distortion was the work of man and not that of God. Obviously there could be no particular point at which to look for God. He is omnipresent, whether manifest or not. He is in all places at all times, knowing all because it is all part of himself, all powerful because there could not possibly be anything that was outside of him. There could be no way of hiding from him except in the illusion that one was apart from him. Just like the sunshine and shadow, you withdraw into the shade for relief from the heat of the sun, but the shade has no real existence of its own. Throughout this narrative, I have tried to make this a fundamental point, but this was the moment when its realization forced itself upon me. In the face of this shining thought, all conceptions of historic experience faded into the background. Man's fall from grace and his long story of redemption was set, like a single sequence, in the endless stride of eternity. All ideas of physical reality and permanence became ephemeral, fading into something terribly near illusion, real only in specific episodes for those attuned to such vibrations, a passing interlude in the story of creation. For in this background of shining ultimation, if such a word is applicable, covering all of space, absorbing time within itself, freed from the trammels of geography, was the real life, the real home of the spirit of man. In this glorious environment he had his place and his identity, part of a transcendent whole. From here his consciousness is projected into experience, from here he fell into the mists of his own gathering because he thought of the possibility of separation from all this wonder, and thus created the environment in which he still struggles for existence, ignorant that he cannot cease to exist even if he desires to do so. During his travels, in deepest and bitterest experience, even when his soul is darkened beyond recognition, his spirit has not stirred one iota in space. It is still there, in the highest heaven, connected with his busy experimenting soul and mind by a silver cord that he himself cannot break. For his spirit is part of God and cannot be separated from that with which it is integrated. The soul of man is on its way back to the spirit of God. I do not know what broke my reverie, nor to what extent Zeros had continued to invade my consciousness with his illuminating thoughts, but when I came back to human consciousness he was gone. But in his place was a wonderful golden glow which even my physical eyes could perceive. It had a benediction all its own, a voice which blessed without words, eyes which, unseeing, shone with love, formless hands which healed, radiating a spiritual strength and authenticity which I had never known before. So we came to that final episode in our wonderful association. His ever-smiling self, Zeros, made his usual appearance in my study, and made his usual inquiry after my well-being. This little ritual completed, he warned me of the immense change in dimension we were about to undergo. I will not disguise from you that there may be some additional strain upon your consciousness. If you would prefer it, we can dispense with this adventure and I will try and tell you the story of ethereal Earth in my own words. But not for a moment would I accept that offer. By this time I was so completely enthralled by all I had learned, and so confident in Zero's power to protect me from unwanted influences, that nothing would dissuade me from this final achievement. Before we settled down to the necessary preparations, Zeros had one final word to say. I want you to remember that in the ethereal state we are going to see, man will have become androgynous once more. That glorious reunion of the two severed halves of one being had been reached and transcended. For in this perfect environment there could be no hint of strife, no need for the sexual urge to ensure that man's flagging desire for reunion did not lean towards stagnation and inertia. These beings had now fitted themselves for the glorious work of creation in which they were engaged, especially in the rectification of that which had been so wrongly distorted in the age of darkness. Surely you can see that such a consummation is worth all the weary struggle, all the heartache and sacrifice needed to purge man of the stains that had besmirched his pristine self. So it was that I sat back in my chair and, at Zero's behest, tried my utmost to release my consciousness from the grip of my human mentality. I know that it is quite possible to discard the physical senses for a brief period and find expression through the finer senses of the soul, for we do this every time we appraise and become absorbed in some object of beauty that captures our attention. The artist, the statesman, the seer, are well accustomed to this dual expression of thought on two planes at one time. The subconscious is quite capable of looking after the needs of the body and even of its locomotion, while the attention of the finer aspects of the mind is concentrated elsewhere. So, as I managed to do on that wondrous occasion, let us quieten our clamorous physical senses and command them to peace, while we adventure in the realms of reality, and visit this garden beautiful recreate, this ethereal realm which exists unseen in the stratosphere at this moment, awaiting the kiss of the Prince of Peace which shall awaken the sleeping beauty and cause it to emerge into the growing consciousness of man of the future dash. When the transition was completed and we stood in a world of wonder almost beyond my power to describe, I found I had almost severed the link which bound me to Earth. I remember that I could hardly recall what my material being was nor any details of my familiar environment. I was in a new world and I belonged to it, or so it seemed at that moment. Later, in my study, Zeros tried to help me to understand this great difference in dimension. Try and convey the idea that spiritual life and environment is more a state of being than a location. A spirit being has form, but it is far less dependent upon it than a soul is upon a human body. The incarnate soul has to make contact with very dense conditions and so has to identify itself wholly with its senses, but the spirit being is freed from any such incubus. It only has to think of some location and it is there. So the nearer the soul gets to that purely spiritual condition, the freer it is and the less does it depend upon its vehicle. You look up at the night skies and are appalled by the immensity of it all. The idea of endless space. That is because your mind is a prisoner of time and space. But if you could travel with the speed of thought, the universe would be too small to hold you. The ethereal earth you have seen is an environment which surrounds the surface you know at present, which by that time will have become dead and cold like the moon's surface. Yet the moon has a living space fully populated, though your human senses can make no sort of contact with it. Nothing in God's universe is dead, as you understand the term. So I suggest that you ask your readers to call imagination to their aid. The imagination is a wonderful servant, though it must be governed by reason. You could not progress without it, for it is a means of probing into propositions that are beyond analysis, and finding out if they are likely to be true. It should be employed with common sense free of prejudice or preconceived ideas, just as the scientist uses the X of unknown quantity when probing into unknown dimensions. So it seemed to me that I was conscious in a world upon which God had cast his image when I awoke to Zeros's promptings. So lovely were the surroundings that every aspect seemed to breathe pure spirit. Here were the meeting points of cosmic rays from, it seemed, every point in the universe, a sort of interchange of the many forces that go to make up the manifestations of life on the cosmic scale. In my supersensitive consciousness, I could actually discern the colored rays of living force that impinged upon the soil, even as do the colors at the rainbow's end. There was a lovely sense of givingness in this interchange of power under the aegis of love. The particular shape or size or color of any object that met the gaze did not seem to matter, only its sense of livingness or radiation. And the more you gazed at and longed for the beauty of the landscape, the more it seemed to advance towards you and you to melt into it. The horizon was where I was. How difficult it is to describe what I felt. And as I pondered over this presentation of the glory of the Creator, I began to sense the presence of the Christ. Now how can I suggest to you this experience? We think of him as the Nazarene, the man of sorrows, or the elder brother. We immerse him in our own troubles. But here he seemed to manifest in every aspect of life. He was this or that object. Somehow I knew beyond doubt that it was his loveliness which animated every atom of that scene. One met him every step of the way. One saw him in every flower. He spoke on the whisper of the wind. He was the glory that sets alight a sunlit sea. He walked beside you. To a lesser extent I felt the same towards Zeros. We seemed to be united and could speak together without uttering a sound. We had almost merged into one being. Now I really began to comprehend the meaning of the idea that all humanity is one in spirit. I simply could not exist apart from Zeros in this rarefied atmosphere. My encounter with these beings, and I must emphasize that they were androgynous souls, having met and fused once more with the lost half of their being, who inhabited this lovely realm, was an amazing experience. They too seem to be united in some strange way, as if they were of one united family, though I could not participate to the same extent as I did with Zeros, whom I knew so well. As I gazed into the eyes of the first ethereal man, man and woman in one, I felt I understood all that it means to be a man, and as I looked deeper I knew what it was to be a woman, something I could never know with my human brain. How futile it looks in print, yet how vivid it was in reality. This composite being, although he could not see me through the veil of time dimension, or could he, radiated a love that was full of strength, yet full of femininity, with no hint of weakness. This, I thought, was surely how the Christ loves. It was of such beauty of expression that I could not even bring myself to speak of it to Zeros, it was too intimate. But in that divine instant I had fallen in love with all humanity. The people of this land held bodies that glowed with an inner radiation that robbed them of any sense of solidity, and they moved with a gliding motion that seemed out of consonance with the ground. I gathered that their bodily organs had largely become vestigial through gradual mutation, and a flow of life force had taken the place of the bloodstream. This ethereal form was all that man now needed for the completion of his destined evolution, for he had acquired wisdom, judgment, capacity for selfless love and other divine qualities through the complete mergence of his will with that of his Creator. For him life and religion had merged into one transcendent experience. Life called to each with a thousand voices, drawing from them the joys of worship which our limited understanding could not grasp. There was scarcely any sense of separation between soul and soul, for they had reached a degree of unity when individuation had become uplifted into unity. I cannot explain that further in words, its meaning belongs to the soul. One of the preoccupations of these lovely people was, I found, the discharge of human responsibility towards the animal world. That which man, since his human incarnation, had illicitly drawn from the animal kingdom, had to be given back in love and service. That this had succeeded beyond our wildest surmises was shown by the magnificent specimens which we saw. All had lost their wildness, and apart from a slight hesitancy to approach, no longer held fear of man. We saw something like a lion, a lovely creature, which stalked past us with an aloof sort of glance which implied a consciousness of difference but no sort of inferiority. Birds were the only creatures which did not seem to have altered much except in gaiety of plumage. But then they have always used an element not so deeply impregnated as the solid earth. The vegetation was subliminal compared to our varieties. Can you imagine many colored lights having the form of vegetables? That was how it seemed to me. Man, I think, was never intended to be an eating creature, but as his body fell in condition in consonance with the fall of his mind, he began to eat roots and then meat, absorbing the juices of earth currents which furthered his own density of being. I cannot find words to transfer but a tithe of what I witnessed in this ethereal world. I gathered that the method of human birth had long reverted to the system I had seen in Atlantis. But there is one mystical experience I must try and clothe in words. As we stood gazing out over a vista so exquisite that no brush or pigment could portray it, it was borne in upon me that here was epitomized the meaning of the Trinity, of which we have such a muddled idea. I sensed the fatherhood of God as a very real aspect of every created thing about me, not merely of the inhabitants of this advanced civilization, but in the sense that he touched every atom of it all with his presence. Each atom, each object, was alive in varying degree with his life. Thus I could realize that however low we might sink, we could never fall out of his sight, for even the atoms of our bodies and the intelligence of our minds are expressions of that fatherhood. There is no part of us which could ever cease to exist, though it may change its form. God lives in the heart of the saint, and he slumbers in the heart of the sinner. Oh, for a magic wand to awaken him in every heart! But of course that is not his way, for it would transgress the free will of the soul within. But instead there is the eternal call to awaken, from the spirit which inhabits each of us, a call which mystifies the materialist but is known to the simplest mind, the call of love. That all happens on the level of spirit, eternal and unchanging, unmanifest, a state of being. But every soul was launched into experience through the matrix of the Christ consciousness. It could not possibly make the journey alone. Could a babe be born without a mother? By many names, in many guises, through many creeds, does the motherhood of the Son of Love uphold the soul of man as it treads the path of deep experience, ennobling, disturbing, uplifting. This mystical call is heard by all, though too often it is misinterpreted. To the spirit of man it is unmistakable. To the soul it is emotionally energizing, to the intellect it is a point for argument. As the soul answers the call in surrender to him, so does it allow the clean winds of love to sweep through the being, in whatever base conditions the soul may be living. Thus does the rose bloom in the desert, thus does a hothouse plant develop a brilliant bloom and then die. The way to love, for fallen mankind, is through service and sacrifice. And then the magic of that glorious abstraction, the Holy Spirit. It is the creative aspect of God, the light that illumines and without which none can find the way. It is the essence of which matter is the form. It gives life, harmonizes it and fulfills it, flowing out as endless waves of creative power, manifesting into forms of divine pattern, weaving a fabric throughout the endless spaces of the universe, whose woof is light and whose warp is love. But now I have reached the periphery of human understanding. Of all that was so clear to me in that heightened consciousness, I have related such as I can squeeze into human language, for the rest - it is beyond the power of my pen. Before concluding, I would like to record my impressions of the final scene when Zeros, the being I had come to love beyond any emotion, severed the psychic link which had enabled us to travel together on such breathtaking adventures. We spoke of many things at that last meeting, and my mind ranged swiftly over all that had happened in an agony lest I had omitted some salient point which required elucidation. Finally, I asked him if he had any message for those who would read my book. Zeros pondered for a while before replying, and I took the opportunity of fixing in my mind an indelible record of those loved features. He radiated such an air of friendliness, of joyousness, of lightness. He was such a tower of spiritual strength, yet he could understand the most crude of human weaknesses. Here was a soul which was purged of any remnants of the lower self. One could not picture Zeros as being ambitious or greedy, jealous or possessive. The words just melted as they touched his name. There was no arrogance in his wisdom, no sense of bitterness, superiority or intolerance. He radiated love for all, as if it were the most ordinary thing to do, as indeed it was. "Tell them," he said at length, "that all they need to know is their own divinity, and that the universe, including the world in which they live, is held together by a love which cannot let go. No human plan or concept can be of lasting value unless it is set against eternal life and spiritual values. Power corrupts. But in the illumination of spirit through dedicated lives, power can safely be employed to perform what might seem miracles of accomplishment. In this darkened world, progress is swiftest through sacrifice and suffering. Service is the ladder by which to climb, for these are hallmarks of a world designed for the resurgence of a guilty humanity. Tell them not to be intimidated by the chaos and despair that characterize their present existence, for that is only a reflection of what is happening on the higher planes of existence. It is but the incineration of all that is evil in the world of men. Make it clear to them that the secret of their existence lies, not only in their individuality for which they are responsible, but in their unity with all creation, for it is that unity which is their lifeline to their spiritual reality. Every act of evil intent drags down the individual concerned, but it also smudges the whole of humanity. Conversely, every act of goodness uplifts the individual and also the whole of humanity by that extent. And because evil is transient and goodness is eternal, it is clear which must win in the end. Finally, I would ask all to forget the messenger and remember only the message. To all who think kindly of me, I will come with the wings of love. But the love is not mine, nor is the message. God cannot fail, for to him failure has no meaning. The Christ of love will, at the perfect moment, and at his father's behest, reveal his splendor to the amazement and dismay of willful humanity, but to the joy and comfort of all who give their love to him. To that end we all work. Zeros stood, and his glorious being seemed to be filled with light until it reached every comer of the room. And now, my son, I must leave you, in body but never in spirit. Fear not the issues, for they are with God.